Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Mets fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian, and with me tonight is a special guest host, the co-host of A Pod of Their Own, my friend and yours, Allison McCaig. Hello, Allison.
Hi, Brian. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. Thank you for filling in for Chris at the last minute. You know, these things happen even in the best of families, so Chris had to do something tonight. And so here we are, and we are we're talking about the Mets. We are recording this during the game on Wednesday night. It is currently tied up two runs apiece against the Indians. Marcus Stroman has left the game after four innings with left hamstring tightness. We don't know too much yet. You know, a hamstring can be nothing or a hamstring can be devastating. So yeah. You know, he spoke to the trainer after the third inning, went back out and pitched a seven pitch fourth inning. So this doesn't appear like he did something catastrophic to it. Just seems like more discomfort, but, you know, we do live in Panic City. So how nervous are you about this most recent development for the Mets?
I mean, as far as like the actual, like, do I think this injury is bad on a scale of like 1 to 10, 10 being like he's out for the year, oh my God, panic, and 1 being like he's fine, maybe about like a 4.
Okay.
But like as far as like if it is something beyond like he didn't drink enough water today and so he tightened up, then like the Mets have no depth. So come on down, walk you want when the Mets are in a wild card race in late August.
Well, if you listened to Gary, Keith, and Ron today, Gary floated the idea of possibly calling up Irvin Santana as the fifth starter, which, you know, Gary was quick to point out, you know, he has bad numbers in AAA right now, but, you know, you never know because he's a veteran and you hope that veteran Grishin, you know, counts for something.
And yeah.
While I don't love the idea of a guy with a 5 ERA in AAA coming up and making starts for the Mets, I don't know how much worse that is than Walker Lockett or Corey Oswalt.
I mean, it's kind of all the same thing. You just hope that, like, if one of those dudes has to make one start, then it's probably fine. But once you get beyond them having to make one start, then it starts to be a problem because this is a team that can't afford to lose any games. They can't afford to go into any game with that much of a disadvantage.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I had to rank it in terms of who I want for one start versus who I'd want for three starts.
Mm.
I think for one start really doesn't matter. It's noise at that point. If it's three starts, maybe Corey Oswalt?
I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of indifferent. I guess I would give the slight edge to Walker Lockett, but like, none of those options are great. And like, if it's one start, then you could maybe do like a bullpen situation.
Sure.
But the Mets don't have any like long men right now is the other issue. So because Gizelman is on the injured list, that's kind of your last long man. I mean, we know that Seth Lugo is capable of going multiple innings, but Seth Lugo is their highest leverage reliever at this point because of everybody else's struggles. Right. And so you can't afford to use him as like a piggybacking bullpen game sort of guy when you might need him in a high leverage situation. And the Mets don't really have any long men in their bullpen right now. I guess like kind of Paul Sewald counts, but like he's not really any better of an option to like quote unquote start a game than like right. Walker Lockett.
Yeah. See, to me, I guess I'm looking at Oswalt has, you know, in AAA has put up an ERA of 2.85, has started 14 games and has struck out 70 in, let's see, 75 innings. I mean, those aren't elite numbers, especially when you consider 76 hits in 75 and a 2/3 innings. But, you know, I just get the feeling that Oswalt is maybe the least unknown factor of the three right now. Like, yeah. I feel like we know what we're going to get more with Oswalt than we do with Lockett or with Santana. But I also think that the ceiling is lowest for Oswalt.
Yeah, I agree. It does kind of make me laugh that Wilmer Font is doing pretty damn good for the Blue Jays right now.
Well, that's the way it always goes with the Mets, isn't
it? Yeah, and I'm not saying that, like, Mets should have held on to Wilmer Font. How dare they? It's not one of those situations, but it's still, like, it's kind of like a little bit of like you get a little bit of a chuckle out of the fact that like the Mets suddenly find themselves in a situation where they might need a spot start and Wilmer Font's out here killing it for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, now if Stroman is hurt for the next few weeks / the rest of the season, does that greatly change your feeling about the Mets' chance to catch a playoff spot?
Yes, it kind of does. Like, I mean, I wouldn't say that it tanks their chances to zero or anything like that, but it would really impact my optimism about the Mets because their starting pitching is what's been carrying them during this. I mean, that's not to say they haven't had positive contributions from their lineup. Obviously, they've been hitting well. But it's really been the starting pitching outside of Zach Wheeler's one hiccup against the Braves. If you think about it, the Mets have not really had a poor performance out of a starter, like a truly poor one, since the All-Star break, basically.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And it's part of what's been better about the bullpen has been in part less exposure because the starters have been going deeper into games. And so it makes me nervous that if we take one of those starters out of the equation, that it's going to have a domino effect and that the bullpen is going to once again be more exposed and they're once again going to start losing these games late, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of problems that we were seeing when the Mets were playing poorly. Right. So, yes, it actually does impact, even though, like, yes, they still have four good starting pitchers. It doesn't break them. But yeah, it does actually impact my outlook a little bit, for sure.
It does for me too, although it doesn't really change for me the team if they make it to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think if they make it to the playoffs, you're probably not seeing much of Stroman anyway.
Sure.
But it's getting them there. And right now, that's such a precarious situation that I would be worried without him in the rotation for any extended period of time.
Right. Because if you think about how the Mets, because we were actually having this discussion in Amazing Avenue Slack, you know, this afternoon at some point, we were kind of, you know, this wasn't us being like the Mets are making the playoffs. And it was just us like, you know, having the fun type of conversations you can have when your team is in it in late August about like what type of, you know, what type of setup the Mets would do with their pitching staff for a theoretical playoff run. Mm-hmm. And we all agreed, even though we disagreed on some details, I think that most of us agreed that either Wheeler or Matz would be the one to go to the bullpen in a situation where the Mets made the playoffs. And so if you just take Stroman out of the equation instead because he's hurt or whatever, you know, you've still got four guys you can rely upon in a starting rotation for the playoffs, which is a, still a hell of a lot more than a lot of teams can say.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're not going to know about Stroman for a couple of days. So while I want to panic right now because that is built into my DNA as a Mets fan, I'm trying to not panic just yet because of all the things we just talked about.
Right. I'm not quite panicking about, like I said, I'm not quite panicking about the severity of the injury yet. I'm waiting to hear on that. But it, if it is bad, I'm kind of panicking a little bit. And it has, and like you said, like it doesn't impact my outlook as far as if the Mets are able to punch their ticket to the playoffs. It's more like, do I think they can get there without him?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure.
And, you know, because of the lack of the waiver deadline, like this actually would have positioned the Mets last year to make a move on the waiver wire.
Yeah, yeah.
And
for sure.
Yes, there are DFA'd guys you can go after, but that pool is much slimmer right now.
Yeah, and there aren't that starting pitchers. Like, yeah, there have been a few relievers. The Mets picked one of them up in Brad Brock.
Who's been pretty good.
Who just pitched. I mean, he gave up a run, but it was kind of an unlucky situation. I mean, he did give up a leadoff walk, which is on him, and
right.
That was his problem in Chicago. So, you know, it's not surprising that some of those issues have carried over, but gave up the leadoff walk and then gave up kind of like a, you know, it was a good piece of hitting on a good pitch. It wasn't like he
Absolutely.
Made a bad pitch.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an unfortunate run, but like he didn't let the inning get away and now the Mets remain tied. So, but Brad Brock was one of those pickups that the Mets did for the bullpen, but that simply doesn't really exist for starting pitching right now. There's
right.
not really anyone that I can think of off the top of my head that at least that would represent an upgrade over like the Corey Oswalt, Walker Lockett contingent of pitchers.
Yeah. I don't think it really exists for the Mets right now either. And what's extra tricky about that is that you don't want to, like, now that the bullpen is seemingly a little bit more stable than it was a few weeks ago or a few months ago, I would be like, if the bullpen didn't have such early volatility, I would say, well, every fifth day you could throw a bullpen day.
Yeah.
I don't feel that way anymore about this team. Like, now that these guys are pitching all right, I don't want to overexpose them and get it back to the way it was. I want to keep this system going as much as possible.
Right. So and part of the problem has been a problem that the Mets have faced for the past 2 years now, which is that Seth Lugo is far too valuable to take him out of the bullpen at this point. And that's even more true now that he's like even sharing the closer role with Edwin Diaz, essentially.
Yeah.
He's like become the closer basically, with Edwin Diaz being the closer when Seth Lugo's pitched 2 days in a row or like whatever.
Right.
So that's the problem, is really like my heart, what my heart wants in a situation where the Mets need a spot start is, you know, make like have Seth Lugo throw the first three innings of a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I want, because Seth Lugo is really one of the best starting pitchers they have still.
Right.
But he's so valuable as a high leverage reliever for them at this point that they cannot afford to take him out of the bullpen.
Yeah. And so, you know, I keep trying to find in my head an option that isn't Oswalt, Santana, Lockett, insert quad A pitcher here. But I don't think that an option exists outside mm-hmm. of those guys right now.
No. Not really, unfortunately.
So this is to say, say a novena, light a candle, do something for Marcus Stroman that he's not hurt.
For real.
Yeah. But one thing that we have kind of hinted at here is that the Mets bullpen has been much improved as of late, as has the Mets bench. You know, tonight's two runs came off the bats of Todd Frazier, Juan Lagares, and
Luis
Guillorme. And yep. I think if the season had gone the way the Mets had hoped, those would be maybe three of their bench players this year.
Right.
And, you know, Lagares and Frazier have played more than planned. Guillorme's probably played about as much as he would have played in almost any situation, unless, actually, maybe Guillorme wouldn't have even played this season if Jed Lowrie was healthy. But that's a whole other story. Anyway.
Right. And I think that Guillorme has played about as much as you would expect, given the fact that the Mets had a Denny Echevarria for a while, who was
yes.
essentially Guillorme role player.
Yes. But, you know, but we've been seeing the bottom of the lineup, the pinch hitters, the bench, really improve. Part of that is the acquisition of Joe Panik. Part of that is the is Juan Lagares just seemingly finding a stroke, not necessarily a sustainable, long-term solution here, but he's hitting the ball a little bit, you know.
But hey, ride that wave, and he looks great in the field.
Yes, he does. Oh my goodness.
Great in the field. He's already gone and gotten a couple of balls today that a lot of fielders would not have gotten. So
yes, I agree completely. I have long been an advocate for, if he can hit just a little bit, he really needs to be playing center field most days for the Mets. And so I'm happy with this. But, you know, you're seeing this, and I hesitate to compare this to 2015 for so many reasons, but when you're watching a good team that's on a good roll, everyone seems to contribute. There seems to be just a role for everybody. And that's the vibe I've been getting from the Mets the last 2 or 3 weeks. Just today's offensive heroics, you know, is the most recent example of that. But we've seen, we've seen Guillerme hit a go-ahead home run, right? We've seen Panik, you know, leg out what looked to be a sure pop-up that was dropped, and then he scored the winning, the go-ahead run. Like, you know, these are things, little things that are just not season-changing moments, but it's nice to see the entire team contributing. And I think there are a couple of people that I want to highlight, but is there anybody for you that's been a big reason why this team has felt so much better as of late?
JD Davis. He has gone from, like, in the off season, sort of like low level bench acquisition that a lot of people criticized because they gave up like not nothing for JD Davis.
Right.
And he had never had success at the major league level, albeit he wasn't given much of a chance, but he had not at all had success at the major league level, despite tearing things up at AAA. The Mets clearly internally thought that he was really good. And obviously, you know, most Mets fans are skeptical of the Mets internal process, to say the least, at times.
Yeah.
And so I think that a lot of people were critical of that acquisition, including me. And I was wrong. We were wrong. We were all wrong. And JD Davis went from, and even he's even obviously since the injuries have hit the Mets, he's elevated himself from semi-regular. I wouldn't call himself a bench bat even early on. He was kind of like a platoonish sort of player, like a semi-regular, to now everyday player who has the highest batting average in all baseball, just the National League. I can't remember. Since the All-Star break, he's hitting like .388. It's like utterly absurd. So I think that, like, he is, in my view, the quintessential example of everybody contributing. Like, he has really stepped it up from where he was before to really carry this team. Because obviously, like, we all know Pete Alonso's awesome. We all know Jeff McNeil is awesome. We all know Michael Conforto is awesome. But someone like JD Davis has been, like, the reason why the Mets have gone to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a really pleasant surprise. He seems like a guy, too, where, I mean, he's been a little bit streaky, but it's not like he's just, I don't think he's going to bat .388 forever, right? But I think that he could be a sustainable part of this team. There's no doubt in my mind that he could play a similar role next season. Maybe not to this level, because this is a lot, but a similar role. I also have to say, and he is not going to light the world on fire, but one of the really nice things the Mets did this year was pick up Joe Panik.
Yeah.
Panik cost them nothing, essentially.
Yep.
He's been a better offensive player than likely Guillerme would have been in that spot.
Or a Denny Echevarria, or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Or Echevarria. He's also okay with the glove. He's not going to kill you at second base right now. And while he's not Robbie Cano, while he's not Jeff McNeil, there's just this elevation of the floor of the bench when you bring in guys like Panik, where you don't think, oh, here's an 0-for-5 every night. And I think that this is overselling his contributions, but to me, the Panic acquisition reminds me a lot of the Juan Uribe, Kelly Johnson arrival in 2015, where the Mets were already pretty much set. Their regulars were all in place, and yet they went out and they brought in these two players that were going to just be just hole fillers wherever needed throughout the rest of the season. They were going to plug a hole in the lineup, plug a hole in the field, and they were better than Eric Campbell, right? That was
right, you know. Exactly.
And that's exactly what Panic is for this season, and I love
exactly
that.
I agree with that, and you could even make a kind of analogous argument for like Brad Brock being like the Tyler Clippard.
Yes, I think that's very fair. I think Brock, you know, has not been lights out, but he's certainly Brock has pitched better than almost anyone not named Lugo pitched in the first half in the Mets bullpen.
Yep, pretty much. And I think a huge part of, to sort of name another, like, kind of under the radar contributor to the team's rise, it has been Justin Wilson.
Yep, he's healthy now.
Ever since he's been healthy, he's been fantastic. He owns the lowest ERA on the staff, like, I think. Like, besides Jacob DeGrom? What's Jacob DeGrom's ERA now? I don't know. It's close, I think. But like, Justin Wilson has, like, a 2.55 ERA or something like that.
Yeah, he looks great.
So he's been great, and he just pitched a scoreless inning in this game that we are now still tied in the eighth inning as we speak. So he pitched a scoreless inning again tonight. He's been very, very solid. And I think that that's been a huge thing in, you know, sort of solidifying the bullpen to give Mickey Callaway like another late inning option to turn to while, like, you know, Seth Lugo takes the most high leverage situations. And, you know, you kind of ease Edwin Diaz and Jairys Familia into those situations like on occasion. Justin Wilson has been like the seventh, eighth inning guy like day in, day out now.
I mean, even Luis Avilon is looking much better now.
Has been a lot better, yeah.
You know, it's pretty incredible. And look, they lost Gazelman this week, likely for the season. And that's a bummer because I want to root
for
Gazelman. And he was not great this year, but he was not the biggest problem in the bullpen by a long shot.
Sure, yeah, he was fine, you know, fine.
Yeah.
And could give you multiple innings, which was a big thing. Again, like once, like on days when you're not getting length out of your starters, like he was the one that was really stepping up to the plate when he needed to come in and pitch like the sixth and seventh innings.
He would have been the guy tonight coming in instead of Familia in the fifth inning.
Yep, definitely. And so it's a blow to that bullpen, even though he's not Seth Lugo. He's not Justin Wilson. He's not pitching those super, super high leverage situations unless the other guys are unavailable. But he gives the bullpen depth and length that it now kind of lacks a little bit. But they're surviving so far.
And this is yet another reason why the Stroman injury matters. Because the Mets starting pitching has been so good. It's been limiting the number. We said this before. It's been shortening the game for the bullpen.
Yep.
And so if you pull Stroman out of there, even if you're getting five good innings from somebody, which is probably what you'd expect from a quad A pitcher, right? Five solid innings.
Three runs, three or four runs, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You know, now you're looking for four innings from your bullpen. Whereas Stroman, I think you're penciling in at least six innings, if not seven innings.
Yeah.
So, by the way, how great is it that we have starting pitching right now that we can pencil in seven innings?
That's awesome. And like, it's good to know that no matter like how this game tonight turns out for the Mets, like we got Syndergaard going tomorrow.
Yep.
And so it's like, even if this goes extras, even if the pen ends up being a little, you know, a little trashed after tonight's game, we've got Noah Syndergaard going tomorrow. And we hope that Noah Syndergaard can be penciled in for at least seven. Which is like a really nice feeling, you know?
Yeah.
It's a nice feeling.
And I have to say, I have to give Callaway some credit so far. He hasn't thrown anybody out there for multiple innings tonight. So everyone should be available tomorrow.
In theory. Yeah.
Although some pitched last night, you know, so I...
Yeah, yeah. But you don't want to pitch too many guys 3 days in a row.
No, certainly not.
Especially a dude that has the injury history he's had this year. Don't want to push it, but yeah, in theory.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling Seth Lugo is probably going to be asked to go more than one here if he gets out of this eighth inning. So
I would think the same thing.
Yeah, he's going to go eighth and ninth, and hoping that the Mets can take the lead in one of those two innings, either take the lead in the eighth or walk it off in the ninth. That's the blueprint right now.
Yes.
Hopefully that happens while we are speaking on this podcast.
Yes, it is.
When you start losing your hair, there's no magical cure. But there is a way to stop hair loss from happening in the first place. It's called Keeps, and it's a treatment that's proven up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. You don't have to go to the doctor's office or stand in line at the pharmacy for a prescription. You'll visit a doctor online, and they'll send the medication right to you in a discreet package. And with Keeps starting at just $10 a month, you don't have to go broke to avoid going bald. 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35, so prevention is key. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. Nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. They have more 5-star reviews than any of their competitors. So take action now and visit keeps.com/SBNation. With our special offer, you'll receive your first month of treatment for free at keeps.com/SBNation. That's KEEPS.com/SBNation.
Hi, Grizz.
Hey, Lila. We're here to tell people about Culture Call, our new transatlantic podcast from the Financial Times.
I'm in New York and Grizz, you're in London.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking to people who we think are shifting culture.
Yeah, our guests include Taffy Bredessa Akner, George the Poet, Gia Tolentino, and Esther Perel.
So please do subscribe, everybody. That's Culture Call, wherever you get your podcasts. All right, excellent.
Bam.
So I did want to ask you a question because I don't, first of all, I'm not medically savvy enough to think about this, but the Mets have had a lot of hamstring injuries this season.
Yeah.
And right now they are, pardon the pun, hamstrung for three players or four players that are out with hamstring injuries right now, counting Stroman.
Counting Stroman, it's Stroman and Cano and McNeil, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's three. Do you think that there's anything to the way the Mets are training that would lead to these injuries? And I know we're speculating wildly here, and I'll throw that out there. But do you think there's any validity to maybe team not stretching enough, team not hydrating enough, anything like that?
Maybe. I mean, the hydration was always a problem with Cespedes and all his lower body problems. But obviously, there was like deeper things going on with him. I don't know. It's hard to say. We all know that they do employ the like bulk up methods with their guys. And I know at least like Jacob deGrom and others have kind of eschewed that a little bit in recent years and have gone more with like agility training and running a lot more. And you notice that he has avoided these injuries, but obviously he's a pitcher, although Stroman is too. And starting pitchers don't tend to get hamstring problems, which is why I am sincerely hoping that this was just a cramp, because like you'd hope that a pitcher doesn't just like tear his hamstring, because that's like indicative of a deeper problem.
Right.
Part of it is that the Mets are making all their players bust it down the line every time.
Yeah.
And that's the Cano problem. That's how Cano hurt himself. That's how McNeil hurt himself.
Yeah.
So it's this, and I mean, obviously it's more surprising on McNeil's part than Cano's, just because Cano is, you know, 36 years old now.
Right.
And you know, we've been trying to say this all year, people, like, it's not laziness, it's conserving your body. He knows his body best, but when the Mets say, you know, when the Mets trash you in the media and say you got to run out every ground ball, this is the stuff that happens. So, I mean, obviously like Stroman isn't a result of that. Although Stroman hustles in
the
field.
Yes, he does. Yep.
He's a gold glove caliber fielder as a pitcher, and he's made multiple like super athletic plays. I think about that one in particular where he ran to first base like as fast as he could. So that's the type of stuff where you would think he would hurt his hamstring.
Right. Yeah.
But he didn't then and he did now. Although I thought So when Stroman was running the bases, in what game was that? When he scored the run on Ahmed Rosario's hit. What day was that? I'm so bad at remembering like what so happened in what games. I'm the worst at that. Anyway, there was a game recently where he was running the bases. I think it was his most recent start before this one. He was on the base paths and he scored. And I thought it looked like he was grimacing on the base paths. Like, and everyone was saying, no, he was just smiling because he was happy. And I was like, I don't know, man. It looked like he was kind of grimacing. And so it makes me wonder if this has been like an underlying issue for like a few days now.
Yeah, something that's been lingering.
But that's, again, wild speculation on my part. But yeah, as far as the position players, it's the making them run out. And Jeff McNeil is not being forced to do this. We know that this is just Jeff McNeil's like personality.
Right, of course, yeah.
But yeah, it takes a lot out of you to bust it down the line every single ground ball over the course of a 162-game season. It just does.
It's also pretty silly to think how to think that's important. But, you know. This is nuts.
Yep.
All right.
Lead off hit, Joe Panic, bottom of the eighth.
There we go. Panic City. I'm waiting to recap a game when he does something good so I can write Panic City as the headline. I'm waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting patiently. So I guess last topic I wanted to discuss before we get out of here, and this is something that's really more of a pot of their own topic. But you guys recorded last night, and this popped up today.
Right.
What's with baseball players taking boner pills?
Oh, my God. This has been a wild day on Twitter.
Yes, it has. It's been
a banner day on baseball Twitter because of players taking boner pills. So, okay. There's a lot to digest with all of this. First of all, players... Like, I can't believe that Major League Baseball had to, like, put out a memo and be like, yo, guys, get the real stuff. Don't go to the gas station and get, like, Rhino 3000 or whatever the hell, like, these random.
That's even like, better. It's even better that it's not just Viagra. That they're like, no,
right?
I'm cool with truck stop boner pills.
Like, what the hell? Like, you would think that professional athletes would... understand better than your average Joe that like putting truly random shit in your body is probably a bad idea. Like
they sign contracts saying they won't do that.
Right. And I'm just like, oh my God, can you be this dumb? Like what? And I can't believe that they're like that they had to like that multiple players have already gotten like suspended over this. Like what?
Not only that. Like, I don't have access to a doctor as readily as any ball player does.
Right.
So, you know, they can write me a prescription. Not only that, I don't have as good a health care as any ball player does. They're paying a copay for this. You know?
Right. They're all loaded, and they all have access to the best possible health care imaginable, and they're buying truck stop boner pills. What the hell? It's just, I'm flabbergasted. And... I mean, obviously, there's, like, you know, there's two sides to this. There's obviously the, like, side that you would think that they'd be using them for. But then, you know, I think it was Eric O'Flaherty, actually, tweeted about how, like, they're using them as, like, basically, like,
speed
uppers.
Yeah.
Like, which, yeah, I guess if you, like, if you... biologist hat on, like, yeah, they're vasodilators, so like, yes, they are going to get you like amped up in addition to their intended use. So, you know, you could see it, but like, again,
that's a bad pun to say you can see it when talking about boner pills, Allison.
Is phrasing not a thing anymore? I guess it's not a thing. But get the real stuff, like, just go get Viagra. I don't understand. Like, it's very, this is America. Viagra is very easy to get.
This is America.
Oh, man. This is just very special. There were many, many, many juiced ball jokes on Twitter.
There was. Yes,
a
there
lot
was.
Of them. I did enjoy that part. That was pretty funny.
I couldn't let that sit for 6 days until a pot of their own had a swing at that one. So, had to bring it up with you.
And you know what? Again, this is America. You can even get them from like a mail-in service discreetly. You don't even have to like talk to people about right, it if that's what your holdup is. Like, you can get them from they show the commercials on every Major League Baseball broadcast for the boner pill mailing services. Yep. I have to see them all. For Roman and all of those other services. They exist, guys. You can just go get them. It's pretty easy. Come on. Truck stop boner pills. What?
I can't name the episode Truck Stop Boner Pills, but I really want to.
Just know that the unofficial name of this episode
yes.
is Truck Stop Boner Pills.
Yeah, exactly. It's Hamstrung will be the title, and then in parentheses, or Truck Stop Boner Pills.
Truck Stop Boner Pills. That's the name of my next album.
Okay, there we go. So, Allison, what's your music pick for this week?
That's a good transition, actually.
Is it?
Didn't do that on purpose. So my music pick is fairly recently, like within the past month, I feel like this isn't the first conversation that we have had in Amazing Avenue Slack about this, but everyone in Amazing Avenue Slack, and most of you probably in the greater Twitter world, probably know that a member of Amazing Avenue, Vaz, and I share the same favorite band, which is Green Day. And so Vaz and I have had extensive conversations about Green Day and Amazing Avenue Slack before, and we both have talked about how important the album American Idiot is to both of us. My music pick is not that album, because everyone knows that album, and everyone knows Dookie, and everyone knows Green Day, and everyone knows most of their albums, but I would like to give a shout to one of their intervening albums between Dookie and American Idiot, because I feel that that period of Green Day's career is vastly underrated.
Please tell me you're picking Insomniac.
I'm picking Warning, actually. Warning is my favorite Green Day album.
I like Warning. I love Insomniac.
Insomniac is also very good. I mean, I'm the biggest Green Day fan ever. You can't, like, there is no Green Day album that you could tell me, like, that you like that I would say is bad. So,
to me, the best one is Kerplunk, but that's also just...
Kerplunk's amazing, too. They're all amazing in their own ways, and yes. they're all very different albums. But, you know, I feel like when people, especially since we're kind of, like, Green Day is still... theoretically an active band. They may or may not be making new music right now. They're being very mysterious about the whole thing. But anyhow, I feel like the period between, because Dookie is obviously what like put them on the map, and then like American Idiot is kind of like what people call like the renaissance of Green Day, basically like coming back into the forefront, like, wow, this is something really different. And American Idiot, I would say, as far as like Green Day albums that mean the most to me, American Idiot is definitely the album that means the most to me, because as a person of my age, I am like very much of the like right smack dab in the middle of the millennial generation. I was born in 1990. And so American Idiot came out when I was 14 years old. And that album is just like, it speaks so much to people of my generation who were kids during 9/11 and the disillusionment of like kind of losing your childhood during that period and the Iraq War and starting to become like politically aware. It's a huge album for people like me. And I feel like Vaz feels the same way. We're of a similar age, and we've talked about that before. But my favorite Green Day album, just like to listen to musically, is Warning. I'm obsessed with that album. It's probably the album I played the most in my life. And so I just want to give a shout out to Warning, because I feel like that period of Green Day's career is like vastly underrated. And we can put Insomniac in that bucket too. People should listen to more of those albums, those intervening albums between Dookie and American Idiot, and give them a little bit more love. As far as like favorite songs on that album, Church on Sunday is probably my favorite. I can't explain why. I love how Warning is just a little bit more, I don't know, mature, and also a little bit more upbeat and like kind of folky than their previous albums. And I think it gives it a different feel. Yeah, yeah. And I just really like that different feel about this album. And I feel like if you are a person who, you know, has listened to Green Day in the past, you know, just kind of casually, but hasn't really gotten deep into their music in a while, give this album a listen again, is what I'll say.
Real quickly, give me your top like three or four Green Day albums.
Okay, so Warning is my number one. American Idiot is number two, because just because it's like super, super important to me. Ooh, and like number three is like the hardest, because those two are like way ahead of everyone else. Oh my God. Ooh, this is so difficult. I probably Insomniac.
Okay. See, so I am 8 years your senior. And so I was in fifth or sixth grade when Dookie came out. And like for a young man who still has a really bad sense of humor, a lot of the Dookie stuff just really landed for me. And there's some great songs. I'm not hating on Dookie at all. So my number one is Kerplunk. My number two is Dookie. My number three is probably either Insomniac, minus Brain Stew, or Nimrod minus Time of Your Life.
Nimrod is such a good album too.
It is, but my dark horse, like rounding out the top five, is the Foxborough Hot Tubs album.
That album's so good.
It slaps. It's really good.
It slaps. People should listen to it. I don't think people know it like exists, but yeah, listen to the Foxborough Hot Tubs album. That album slaps.
It's just like super good garage rock. That song Mother Mary is so catchy.
So good.
I walk around singing that song way more than I should for an album I haven't heard that many times, but yeah. Yeah. So I actually picked my music pick because you were going to be on the show.
Oh, yay.
I hope I'm not confusing Green Day with this. Are you also a Blink-182 fan?
I do like Blink-182, yes.
Okay. I think I was thinking they were your favorite band, not Green Day, but this is a Blink-182 adjacent pick. So, again, I was born in 82, so I was in, I guess, middle school or early high school when Blink-182's Dude Ranch came out. And so that is sort of my Blink album. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I have friends who are a couple years younger than me that Enema of the State is the one they grew up with, or Take Off Your Pants and Jacket,
that's,
whatever.
That's me.
Yeah, see, I'm a Dude Ranch guy. And there is a Los Angeles-based singer-songwriter named Colleen Green, who I adore. She's fantastic. And she recently released an album, a full album cover of Dude Ranch by Blink-182.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she played She played it on a bass. And it's like all the songs are super slow and super moody and super like you get a really different emotional sense of the album than you would have with like the super fast punky versions of them. And it really draws out sort of the beauty of some of the melodies and also the sadness of some of the lyrics. I mean, some of the songs are really very silly, but some [S2] Yes. [S1] some of the songs do have like legitimate emotional resonance to them. And her versions really pull that out. And so it's not available on Spotify or Apple Music, but you can buy it for $7 from her Bandcamp. And so I did that, and I greatly enjoy it. And I believe if you go to the Bandcamp page, you can listen to two or three of the songs without buying it to see if it's something that's up your alley. But it's really cool, and it's I don't find myself going back and listening to Blink-182 songs all that often. It's just not the music I'm listening to at this point in my life. Though, like, if I'm in a bar and a song comes on, I'm very happy to listen to it. And, every now and then I'll put on Dude Ranch for a spin. But this is a really interesting way to reconnect with those songs in a very different way. So
right.
That's my recommendation.
A fresh
yes.
perspective to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, folks, that does it for another installment of Amazing Avenue Audio. Allison and I are going to go watch the end of this game, and hopefully the Mets pull out a win for this game, which would be lovely. Until next time, go to AmazingAvenue.com. You can find all these podcasts, as well as game recaps, news, the best minor league coverage on the internet, as far as I'm concerned, and lots more Mets stuff. So go to AmazingAvenue.com right now to check that out. You can also find the site on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can get this show from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify. If you can get podcasts someplace, you can probably get this show there. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the show because we appreciate that. You can email us, aaaudiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Allison on Twitter at PetitePhD. You can find me on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's fucking go Mets.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hi, I'm Amanda Clute, editor-in-chief of Eater.
And I am Daniel Janine, a producer here at Eater.
And we are here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Eater's Digest.
Every week on the show, we dive into the weirdest, funniest, and most important stories in the world of food.
With the inside scoop from the biggest names in the industry and expert insights from the Eater newsroom.
It's a really fun time, so I would say subscribe to Eater's Digest for free today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.